Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the newsroom here at Car Talk Plaza.
No, we had one.
Well, we didn't until yesterday. Now, we know that All Things Considered and Morning Edition can't cover every story that's out there. I mean, it's just impossible, right?
It is.
So in the interest of public service, here are a few headlines from last year that our premier news shows probably missed.
These are real headlines from newspapers.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's one. Police begin campaign to run down jaywalkers. How about this? Panda mating fails. Veterinarian to take over. I mean, they all make sense. How about this one? Astronaut takes blame for gas in space. I like this one here. When making cookies, include your children. That's it.
Well, you know, I'm sure after these things were printed, the authors must have said,
oh, did I write that? Well, you know, it's interesting that there's a certain skill to writing headlines because there are words used that you don't normally use, and the arrangement of words is different. And you screw up by a little bit by just moving something.
Yeah, well, we do it every week.
We do it every week.
Anyway, if you have an urgent bulletin about your car for us, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-827-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Amy. I'm calling from Whittier, California.
Whittier?
Whittier. It's about 15 miles west of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We know we know where Whittier is, I think.
No kidding.
Yeah. I don't think I've been
did
there.
Did you say west of Los Angeles? Isn't that out in the ocean?
No, of course. I would never say something. No. East.
East.
Oh, east.
So what's going on, Amy?
Okay. I've been borrowing my mother's 91 GMC Safari van for about a year and a half. And it's a wonderful car. It works fine, but all of her friends and family have been saying that because it's at 116,000 miles, we should change the timing belt. Well, it turns out it doesn't have a timing belt. It has a chain.
Right.
So don't bother changing it.
Well, good. That was my question. I've had 8 different opinions about it.
Well, you know, this is a conventional pushrod engine, and those engines had timing chains. It's a very short chain. And luckily, if the chain breaks or skips teeth or whatever, it won't wreck the engine.
Okay.
No. But it will, you'll stop going. You'll be stuck in the middle of nowhere if it happens. But it hardly ever happens.
Oh, no. How many miles are on it?
116.
It usually happens around 100,000 miles. So you're 16,000 overdue. And a lot depends, quite honestly, on how you drive it.
Well, it's city driving only. Is that your question?
That could be worse.
It's whether you're a hot rodder. Whether you slam on the gas pedal all the time.
No, I'm a perfect driver.
And you do things that are...
Your mother's probably not listening, Amy. You can tell us the truth.
And if she's sitting next to me?
Your mother's sitting next to you?
Oh. This could be a problem.
So if we say something that you agree with, but you don't want to, you just say, yeah, you betcha.
Yeah, you betcha. Okay.
So you do take off like an animal from stoplights.
No, I was just...
Okay.
And if you don't, I mean, do you drive the car more than she does?
Oh, yes. 100%. She doesn't use it at all these days.
Well, I'll tell you that in and of itself, stop-and-go driving is bad on a timing chain because
okay.
Every time you accelerate the engine, what engines love to do the best is run at a constant speed. If you started this thing up and just kept driving and never shut it off...
It would last forever.
It would last forever.
Okay.
But what kills engines is changing the engine speed. That's when you put stress on the timing chain and you stretch it.
For example, when you're going onto a freeway, you get up on the ramp, and then you look back to see who's coming, and you slam on the gas pedal to get up to the speed.
Yeah.
Up to that 10 miles an hour that everyone else is going on the freeway.
So is this a you betcha?
Can we hear a yeah, you betcha, or is this a...
Yeah. If this is a yeah, you betcha, then you probably ought to have it done.
And if not, and if I'm being honest about being a good driver, then I'm all right?
Well, you could be. I mean, here's the thing that's going to happen. It's going to break sometime.
Okay.
But you know what? Lots of things are going to break, many of which could leave you stuck. For example, the fuel pump on this vehicle is probably as old as the timing chain.
Yeah.
There's a better chance that that's going to fail and leave you stuck. So should you replace the fuel pump? Of course not. You wait till things break.
Yeah,
okay.
You can't just go fixing everything before it breaks because
right.
there are too many of them.
Okay. There are just way too many things to fix, and it would be too costly. And it would take all the excitement out of owning a 91 GMC Safari.
That's true.
Right?
That's why it's called a safari.
Yeah, do you have supplies on board, you know, like bullets and and water and, you know.
Yeah, just my crossbow. I think I'm all right.
Yeah. You're all right.
I mean, when people say, how's everything, you say, safari's so goody.
Okay, we'll be moving right along now.
Thank you.
See you, Amy.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah, you betcha.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227.
Wait a minute. Did a timing chain ever break on any old Heap that you ever owned?
As a matter of fact, it did. I
really?
Distinctly. I was on vacation and
this wasn't the trip to Montreal.
Oh, no. But it was the same car. I was on vacation
really?
And I stopped for gasoline and started the engine up after filling up the tank at one of these gas stations that whose price was a little lower. Actually, a lot lower than everyone else. So I suspected that the quality of the gas wasn't quite up there, but I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So I fill the tank up, and immediately the car begins to buck and shudder. I said, oh, jeez. So I go back to that gas station, and I say, gee, I think there's something wrong with your gas. And he says, look, I'll just pump it out and give you your money back. And he does that. He pumps the gas out of my tank.
Really?
And refunds my money. I go to the gas station across the street and fill up with the good stuff.
Same thing.
No improvement. I drive to the place that we're renting, the cabin that we've rented, and the car conks out because the timing chain was on its last legs and broke right in front of the place.
And how many miles on it?
I think about 116K, actually. But I should explain that most modern cars have timing belts and not chains, although there are some cars that still do have timing chains. And there's a, you know,
In the old days, everyone had a timing chain.
And they do the same thing. The timing belt and the timing chain do the same thing, but because the belt is rubber, it's susceptible to breakage without warning. And the timing chain is too, but it's less likely to happen.
Yeah.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Stosh from Brooklyn.
Stosh.
Stosh.
Stosh, that's it.
That's it.
This is a nickname, obviously.
Obviously, yes.
Yeah,
we know what nationality you are, man.
Don't go there.
Anyway, Stosh, what's going on in New York City?
I have a 2002 Volkswagen Jetta wagon.
Yeah.
And I have an intermittent electrical problem. It's my signal indicators. Now, I turn the signal indicator on to turn or switch lanes, either left or right, and it clicks normally. And then when it goes back into the neutral position, it starts to click double time very fast, like click, 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 click. It'll do that for about a minute, and then it'll stop. And then the next time I use my signal indicator, either left or right, it'll click normally. And then when it goes back to the neutral position, it starts clicking wildly again.
Neutral position meaning the steering wheel?
The off position.
The off position.
Yeah.
In other words, after it cancels.
After it cancels.
Is the clicking accompanied by the little light on the dashboard still lighting up?
No. Wow. No lights on the dashboard, and I went outside and looked, and there's no lights flashing on the outside of the car either.
So what you hear clicking is the thing called the flasher.
Oh.
But I think what you have wrong is the switch is bad.
Which switch? The
switch that makes the directional lights go on.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't go ahead and replace that unless I replace the flasher first, because that's a lot easier to do.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that the first thing you want to do is go out and buy yourself a flasher.
Now, if this was a Chevy, it would cost you $2, but because it's a Jetta, it's probably going to cost you $22.
Yeah.
Only because it's the one that fits a lot of different cars does not fit this car. It's a special one. But you'll have to go to the Volkswagen dealer and buy one.
Ask them for a flasher?
Yeah, directional flasher.
A directional flasher.
Yeah, and you don't want the guy with the trench coat to come out. You know, that kind of flasher.
Where do I put this?
Can I see your flasher? I don't think so.
Where does this unit fit in
the dashboard? Well, here's how you're going to find it.
You look at the one you bought.
Okay.
And then you
have the impression of it embedded in your mind.
Then you're going to turn the key on, and you're going to turn on the directionals. And you're going to hear the thing going clink, 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 and you're going to get under the dashboard where it's located, I believe, and you're going to feel around until you feel the thing that's going clink, 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 and you're going to pull it out, at which point it'll stop doing that.
Right. Right, and it just pulls straight out. It's plugged
yep.
in and
it
out.
It just pulls straight out, and then you plug the new one right in.
I mean, this thing got so bad that I stopped using my directionals and used hand signals, which I haven't used for 20 years.
Really?
And it's during the winter was when it was the worst. So here I am in a snowstorm, and I got my hands out because it gets so annoying when it's just click, 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 click,
yeah.
on and on.
And the fact that it does it whether you're making a left or a right-hand turn suggests
right.
that it isn't anything in the wiring because it would be too coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I
right.
think it could easily be the flasher, but it could just as easily be the switch. But if the flasher is $20, you put one in, and it's cheaper than taking the thing to some shop to have it diagnosed because they're going to charge you much more than that.
Oh, I know.
And if this doesn't fix it, then you're pretty sure it's the switch, and then you can take it someplace and have it done.
Okay.
Good
so
luck.
Do people really call you Stosh?
Absolutely.
Great. See you later, man.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Sean Mitchell, and I'm from Maine, New York.
Sean?
Yes.
S-E-A-N?
Mm-hmm.
Where the heck is Maine, New York?
Well, I tell you what, if you find out, would you send somebody out
there
to get me?
Get me out of here.
Oh. We promise.
My husband got transferred up here about 7 months ago, and I am so lost.
And you're from what, North Carolina?
Oh, I wish I was. No, I'm from Kansas, Overland Park, Kansas.
What? Is your husband in the military?
No, my husband's in information technology.
Oh,
he's a spy.
They sent us home to the mothership.
Well, if we find out where it is, we will send a rescue team out there.
Well, yeah, I would really appreciate it.
So what's going on?
Well, it's not my car. It's my husband's car.
Yeah, it's always somebody else's car.
It's a 1990 Audi Quattro. It's an 8-cylinder car.
I gotcha.
Now, my husband likes me, but he loves this car.
Yeah.
Now, when we lived in Kansas, my husband didn't have a problem with his car. But now that we're living in New York, the windows are fogging. And my husband tells me the reason the windows are fogging is because I'm breathing too hard in the back seat.
You're going to tell him it's because of him.
Yeah.
He makes you so hot
that
you're panting for him.
I'm the only one in the back seat. And the reason I have to ride in the back seat is because he parks the car so close so that the kids can't scratch it. You know, getting the bikes and the balls and everything.
Oh, so you have to get in on the same side as he does.
I do. My son is in the front seat with him.
And he's narrowed it down. There are at least three people in the car, and he's narrowed it down to you breathing.
Because it's fogging back there.
Oh, it's not fogging in the front.
Well, you know, I'm so huddled down in the coat in the back because he has no heat on, see. But these guys sweat when they think hard, so they never turn the heat on.
Yeah. So he does have the heater on and the fan is blowing.
Yes.
But he has turned off the vents in the front.
Yes.
So you're only getting the heat in the back.
Yes.
So what do you want from us? You want a recommendation of where to buy, like, the best long underwear?
No, I already bought myself a fur coat.
There you go.
No, my brother-in-law says, and he works for an automobile car. He says the reason that it's foggy like that is because he's got a crack in the cooling system.
Oh.
But if he does turn the heat on, does it fog up in the front?
I don't know. I've never seen the heat on in the front.
And what is he, some kind of Neanderthal that doesn't turn the heat on?
He says his foot gets too hot and he can't drive.
Guy's nuts.
Ask him to do this, and this will solve your problem. Tell him, don't turn the heat on, hun. Turn on instead the defroster. And if you turn on the defroster, it'll accomplish two things. Number one, it will stop his foot from burning up because the heat will be sent to the windshield. And number two, it'll stop the car from fogging up because it will turn on at the same time the air conditioner. But it won't chill you. What it will do is remove the moisture from the air from your panting. You're panting because you're freezing.
But he tells me that it never fogged up like this when we lived in Kansas.
Well, sure, because you don't have the severe weather conditions. You don't have a 6-degree windshield in Kansas. When that windshield is cold, anything that hits it, any moisture that hits it, condenses. immediately. It's like, you know, how your iced tea glass gets condensation on the outside in the summer?
Yes.
Okay, because you have iced tea in the glass.
Just tell him, hun, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Well, I keep telling him that. He keeps calling me Dorothy.
No, and he could,
so do you think there's a crack in the cooling system?
No, I think the cracks are in his head. Do you have another car?
I have just my van.
Just your van. I mean, but he drives this all the time. Do you have to go with him?
Well, when we go to church and that kind of thing, usually we go two separate cars.
Yeah, I'd start walking to church. It's good to be good for, healthy for you.
Well, over the river and through the woods here, you know.
good luck, Sean.
Bye.
You've got a tough one there.
Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Hey, are you ready for the answer to last week's puzzler?
Of course I am.
You remember last week's puzzler?
Of course I don't.
Well, you know, interestingly, it was about a Fiat.
Oh, my car.
That was leaking gasoline. That sound familiar?
Well, the words Fiat and leaking sound very familiar to me.
As well they should. Anyway, we'll recap the whole puzzler and give the answer when we come back in just a minute. So please stay tuned. I don't want no Cadillac. And even though listeners wish a garbage truck would back up outside their window whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzle.
Let's go.
Well, this was from my last gasp of the Fiat series, and this was sent in by a young lady named Ann McDonald, who writes,
"Yeah,
I'm a seventh grader." This should give you some hint of how easy the puzzle should be. "I'm a seventh grader attending school right across the river from your fair city. I was doing my math homework this evening, and I realized that it was both car-related and a puzzler. Here it is."
Wait a minute. We're doing her homework for her?
Smart kid, eh? Anyway, here's Ann's puzzler. Tom's Fiat travels at a steady speed of 45 miles per hour. Must have been on its best day ever.
No, downhill.
Its fuel consumption is 30 miles to the gallon. That's about right, right?
Yeah.
Are you writing all this down?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, 30 mpg, right? You got it. Okay.
30 mpg.
There you go.
Got it.
Steady 45 miles an hour, 30 miles per gallon is the consumption. The Fiat has a 15-gallon gas tank, which was full when the car started off. But at the very moment the car begins to move at 45, the gas tank begins to leak fuel.
Is that why it always smells so bad?
No, that's you.
No, it's not.
Anyway, after 225 miles, the car stops completely because it's what?
Out of gas.
Right. So 45 miles an hour, 30 miles per gallon, and 225 miles to empty. The question is, where were you driving this heap? No, the question is, how many gallons per hour was the car leaking?
Gallons per hour.
Exactly.
That's good.
Gallons per hour. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Well, 225 miles of driving at 45 miles an hour, okay, is 5 hours of driving.
Yeah.
You with me so far?
I'm with you.
So at 30 miles to the gallon, those 225 miles used up 7.5 gallons of gasoline.
Yeah.
Okay, you got
yeah,
that?
Got
so
that.
7.5 was used to drive to 225 miles, which took, of course, 5 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. And so 7.5 gallons must have leaked out because it didn't go any farther than those 225 miles. And in 5 hours, it lost 7.5 gallons of gasoline, which is 1.5 gallons an hour. Voila. That's the answer. So do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Our winner this week is Nancy Schroeder from Omaha, Nebraska. And for having her answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Nancy's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which she can get a set of our Car Talk reusable shopping bags.
Yeah, I mean, these are reusable bags that you can bring to the supermarket with you, you know. And instead of using a paper bag or even worse, a plastic bag, you can load up your groceries in a Car Talk reusable bag.
But what about the embarrassment of having a bag that says Car Talk on it?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Well, you can ask for a plastic bag, and you can drop the Car Talk bag in it.
Sure.
Anyway, we have a brand new, I'd have to call this quasi-automotive puzzler coming up in the third half of the show today. So stay tuned. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, you can give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-272-7825. Lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Lorraine in St. Louis.
Hi, Lorraine.
Lorraine with an O or an A?
With an A. I'm probably one of the only people around with an A.
Really?
But my mom couldn't spell.
So what's up?
Well, I have an 88 Acura Legend, and it's making a funny noise, kind of like a... goes on for about 5 seconds. If I apply the brake, it usually stops, but not always.
So it happens when you're driving along?
When I'm driving along. It usually also happens, especially when I've first started up and I'm pulling out of the driveway.
St. Louis, huh?
Gotcha.
So let me get this right. You pull out of the driveway, you begin to hear this, what I have to describe as a scraping noise?
Well, not so much as scraping.
A rattling.
Kind of like if you put a baseball
card in the spokes of a bicycle.
The spokes of your bicycle, that's right.
And as soon as you touch the brakes?
Yeah, pretty much so. But not always. It doesn't always stop when I touch the brakes.
Oh, really?
Well, it doesn't always stop when you... It's these little words, you know.
Oh, my brother's passing a brainstone.
If we could just chop out certain words, then life would be so simple. It doesn't always stop when you step on the brakes?
No.
All right. Well, then but
where'd you get this number?
This is bakeacake.com.
Yes, it is.
Well, I do have one other clue on this.
Good. We need all the clues.
I started noticing this in about October, and it was just really bad throughout the winter. And now that the weather is perked up a little and temperatures have come up, I'm not hearing it as frequently.
Oh. Where do you think this noise is coming from?
Well, inside the engine compartment.
Very close to you?
No, it actually sounds like it's probably about 3 feet forward of me.
Oh, shut up.
For a minute, I thought my brother was hot on the trail or something.
Well, I was.
Yeah, his tail was pointing and his nose was in the air, but evidently it didn't pan out.
And when I first had noticed this,
Wait! Is it more likely to happen when you have the defroster on?
No. No.
I'm going to ask you one more time, Lorraine. Is it... Is it more likely to happen when you have the defroster on?
Do you know the penalties for perjury?
Well, here's what I thought it could be. It could be a bad air conditioner compressor.
That's 3 feet. The distance is right.
I'm going for distance, that's all.
It's a geographical oddity.
I'm going for distance only.
I was going for sound.
No.
I was going for sound.
Too many possibilities. Distance is good.
In the winter, when the weather was not as friendly as you say, then I suspect that you had the heater on all the time,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the blower motor was running
all the time. And the defroster.
Mm-hmm. And now that you said the weather has perked up a little bit, you've probably turned off the fan.
No, I still run it.
Have you had the air? Have you had the air conditioner on, or are you just running the heat?
Actually, I've had the air conditioner on too.
And it hasn't made the noise?
It has made the noise.
You have to do an experiment. See if the noise goes away with the turn all that stuff off.
Okay.
And see if the noise disappears completely.
Okay.
And if the noise goes away, call us back. If it doesn't go away, don't call us back. We don't want to talk to you. We don't want to see you again. Don't darken all of the airwaves again, Lorraine.
Hey.
Hey, thanks a million.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
It's been a lot of fun, Lorraine. You're a good sport. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I like this new method of intimidating the caller. They don't give the answer you want.
We'll try anything.
Put a little pressure.
We're getting desperate. All right, I got some mail to read. This is really good. This is from James Horn. We don't know where he's from. Just you have to visualize this. I went to a junkyard one sunny Saturday morning. Isolated in the middle of the junkyard was a single car with the hood removed, exposing the engine. Along came a large yellow front end loader. It stopped in front of the car, and the driver, let's call him Ted, climbed out of the front end loader. Ted wrapped a heavy chain around the engine and tied the other end of the chain to the bucket, which was positioned above the engine. You got it?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Ted climbs back into the front end loader, raises the bucket, which in turn lifts the car by the engine, so it's now at a 45-degree angle to the ground. Got it?
Got it.
Ted leaves the front end loader, gets an acetylene cutting torch, lights it, walks calmly under the car engine, and using the cutting torch, cuts the motor mounts in a spectacular shower of sparks.
Yes, indeed.
Are you with it now? He's underneath the car, which is being held up by a chain attached to the engine.
Yeah, I can see how
he's disconnecting the engine.
I can see how this plays out. It sounds perfectly logical to me.
When the last motor mount is cut, the car comes crashing to the ground.
Around Ted.
Ted is now standing in the engine compartment, and the engine is suspended above him by the chain on the front end loader's bucket.
So the engine is looming above him.
Looming above him. The car fell down, but where was he standing? Right in the engine compartment.
Like the sword of Damocles above his head.
Ted turns off the torch, climbs out of the engine compartment, and drives away in the front end loader with the engine swinging beneath the bucket. Now that's how you remove an engine. Holy cow. Well, I mean, how did he do it the first time? You had to go under there and you say, let's see, if I just stand right here.
you know what it's called? Faith.
It's faith or real utter stupidity.
No, it's faith. And Ted must derive a certain job satisfaction.
Nice going, Ted.
Can I borrow your car today?
No.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Dave. I'm from Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Hey, Dave.
Steamboat Springs.
I have a 1951 MGTD with 74,000 miles.
Get out.
Yep.
You know what I have?
What?
A 1952 MGTD.
Really?
And Dave, I've got a good authority.
Yeah.
If you need parts, I know where to get them.
I've got a few piling up.
I know a guy who knows a guy, you know?
And I can say that I have somehow monkeyed around with every piece of this car.
Well, good.
So, there isn't a thing you can bring up that I can't tell you about.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You ready?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're
ready.
And
I got a question for you.
Okay. Well, we like to drive this car. We drove it to Indiana last year.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you, out of your mind?
I have a very patient wife.
Oh, no, it'll go forever, man.
Yeah. Well, what it's doing is if we drive it for a long distance at high RPMs, about 4,000 to 5,000 RPMs,
yeah,
it will start to act like it's running out of gas or the timing's off, but it's not.
Will it skip and...
It
just slows down?
It just slows down. It won't die, but it won't go over about 3,000 RPMs.
Got it.
Oh.
But we can drive it, you know, we drove it 1,000 miles and it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day it would happen every 50 or so miles. And what we do is turn the car off, let it sit for about 5 minutes, start it back up, and take back off.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants. There's hardly a thing that could be wrong with this car that you wouldn't know about. All right, go ahead.
I have to admit, I've never driven it at such distances.
But you see, let's go back again. By the way, before we go on, have you had occasion to drive this in the rain?
Yes.
Do you have the same kind of wipers? The wipers my brother has on his car move at what we call geologic speed.
Glacial.
We reach out over the windshield and move them back and forth sometimes.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, while we're thinking about your problem.
The Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria had better wipers than this thing has.
I'll agree.
Have you ever had this problem, which only occurred the other day for me, for the first time ever?
Uh-huh.
I start up the car and move it somewhere. I turn off the key, and the engine keeps running.
No.
Never happened.
No one has that problem with MGs. It's keeping them running that's the problem.
And we fooled around with this for 2 days.
Wait a minute. Is it his call or your call? You calling him?
No. I thought he could help me as well.
We haven't helped him.
We fooled around for 2 days. We could not figure out why it was doing this, and we couldn't make it stop doing it. And then one day, it fixed itself. And now it's working perfectly. But to my knowledge, we did nothing to fix it.
I think you need Dave's home number.
So you never
had to... Let's go back to Dave's problem.
Yeah.
So you lose power.
You lose power.
And while you're experiencing this diminished power, there's no interrupt, there's no skipping or missing of the engine. It's just as if there's someone pulling you back with a rope.
Yeah, when it first happened, I thought it was fouled plugs. It felt like we were running on two cylinders.
Uh-huh.
Have you topped up the carburetors with oil?
No.
Do you know if there's oil in them?
No.
You don't?
But I've read about that.
And you're driving this thing 1,500 miles at a... What, are you crazy?
Well, I don't know why, but I suspect the carburetors. My sixth sense told me...
Oh, this is unencumbered by the thought process?
Unencumbered by the thought process. My sixth sense told me that if you top up those carburetors...
It's a good thing he's relying on the six, because the other five ain't working too good.
I mean, you know how to test it, don't you? The little screw on top of the carburetor, the thing that unscrews and you pull it out and it looks like a little...
Right, I've read about that.
Like a little brass piston.
Yeah.
And then you drop in a little bit of, I use automatic transmission fluid.
Okay.
And then you put it back in and you'll feel the pressure against you as you put it back in. Then you've got enough.
And what does that do?
What does that do?
It damps the ascent of the piston inside the carburetor when you open the throttle.
Yeah. And I think what's happening is the piston is not being damped.
Uh-huh.
And so it's opening way up.
Uh-huh.
And that's why you're not getting power, because you've got, in that carburetor, you've got a very, very lean mixture.
Genius. That makes sense.
It does make sense. I don't want it to make sense. I just wanted to feel it. So
I
somehow think that if you top those babies up, this problem's going to go away.
Oh, yeah. No, I feel very strongly that it's time for you to hang up now, Dave.
Then I can move on to the next one.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, look, keep in touch, and I'm sure you will.
And if anyone else out there with an MGTD has ever experienced this business with the engine not shutting off, I would love to hear what you did to fix it.
I'm confident that Dave will be calling back every week. See you later. Now that he has our number, we're never getting rid of him.
Dave, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. There aren't many of us.
Well, no, but...
As marvelous as that car is, as they say, the gear ratios were made for climbing trees.
Well, we live at 8,000 feet, so it climbs the hill just fine.
Oh, you're perfect.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
car.
Well,
give this a try, and if it works, I would love to hear it.
Sure.
See you, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, it's time for us to take a very short break.
This is so our local stations can, like, identify themselves?
No, this is so the protesters outside the stations can put down their placards and take a load off, you know. So we'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a minute.
When I'm on the road, jump in my car and go. I got the window down, one hand on the radio. No complications, interrupt the flow. No complications, that's the way I feel. Just one foot on the gas, one hand on the wheel. My automatic transmission knows the RNDL spells go.
And even though Ivan Pavlov reflexively rolls over in his grave to turn off the radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Which you said was going to be quasi-automotive.
Well, it's more than quasi.
Yes, master. Yeah.
I like this. It was sent in by a listener, I guess, whose name is Mark Sackler. And we don't know where he's from, but whence he's from, but he sent us an email, the subject of which was strange accident. Oh. And he said, here is a car puzzler, and it is a true story. This really happened to me many years ago, 1984 to be precise, but that has nothing to do with anything.
Can we believe you when you say that?
You can believe me. I'm telling the truth.
Can we believe that?
No. Really. You can believe Mark, however. Yeah. I'm just reading what he wrote.
Go ahead.
Because I couldn't possibly...
I'm intrigued already.
No obfuscations could improve this.
Yeah.
My car was in an accident, and the significant facts were my car, a 1982 Toyota Celica, rear-ended another vehicle. You got that? That's fact number one.
Fact number one.
Number two, the other vehicle was stationary at the instant of the accident.
Okay.
Okay, you with me?
Yep. I even know the answer already. I don't even know what the question is, but I know the answer. Go ahead.
Okay, number three. Let's see how your answer holds up under scrutiny.
Yeah.
My car was unoccupied at the time of the accident. Okay. Number four, I was a passenger in the other vehicle when it was struck by my car.
Yeah.
And number five, here's the kicker, he says. The accident was the other vehicle's fault, and their insurance paid for the damage to my vehicle.
I've got it. I've got the answer. I don't even know the question.
What day of the week? The question is, what kind of vehicle did my car strike? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or in the deed to a 10-bedroom, waterfront, fully dormered, Cape-style cottage on the south side of Quissett Harbor with widow's walk, yacht slip, private beach, ocean view deck, and groundskeeping team.
Be careful what you ask for.
Indentured groundskeeping team. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
Right now, if you have a question about your car or anything else, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Shayla from Ithaca, New York.
Shayla as in S-H-E-I-L-A?
No.
S-H-A-Y-L-A.
No.
Stop trying.
S-H-E-A-L-E-I-G-H-E-A-U-X.
That was really close, actually. Oh,
really?
It's S-H-E-L-A-G-H.
Ooh, that was close, Frank.
S-H-E-A-I-L. Okay. Where are you from? Ithaca.
Shayla.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what kind of name is that, pray tell?
It's Irish Gaelic. Apparently, it's got a little Scottish.
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah, no, it's, yeah. So, what's going on, Shayla?
Well, I drive a 2002 Subaru Outback, the LL Bean edition, and up here in these nasty, nasty winters, I've been getting hard ice and snow packed up in all the wheel wells to the point that whenever I start driving or take turns, it's grinding on the wheels,
yeah,
on the tires.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, number one, if it's damaging the tires, and number two, I had this ex-boyfriend many years ago who always told me never to knock the ice off or I'd damage molding and stuff.
I'm glad you dumped him.
And yeah,
because he was a moron.
I think of him. I think about him every time I'm hacking away at the ice.
Yeah.
But are you the only one who has this problem? Where you drive? You're driving across the lake to get home?
No, I'm just driving into work.
Yeah, you know what it must be? It must be that there's so little space between the wheel and the wheel opening,
mm-hmm,
that once it gets packed with snow, if you had tires that were smaller, for example, it would be less likely to happen, perhaps.
Oh.
But it must happen a lot with Outbacks, especially if you live in a godforsaken place like Ithaca, New York. You know, you could relocate.
I don't have this problem with my MG.
No, because it's on blocks now. Yeah, he's
so
just...
your old boyfriend there was a crazy nut. There's nothing there that you can break.
That's what I thought.
So you've been doing it?
Yeah. Oh,
of course.
Yeah.
With what?
My little ice scraper.
You know what I do? I use a flamethrower. I mean, it's the first thing that came to mind.
I've never.
And you wonder why no one listens anymore. We're losing listeners every day, Shayla. But keep doing what you're doing. You're not hurting anything. There's nothing up. What's up there is a plastic fender liner.
Right.
You know, and of course the shock towers, the strut towers, and the springs are there. But you're not going to hurt anything there.
Okay.
Yeah, and try to find a heated garage to park in once in a while.
Okay.
See you, Shayla.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, bye.
You got to be careful when you listen to old boyfriend's advice.
But it's interesting that that's what she would have remembered about her old boyfriend.
Yeah.
There must have been some good advice that he gave her.
Who knows?
Like, move on.
Yeah.
Who knows? 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255.
Wait, are these the kinds of things that you remember about old girlfriends?
I have no old girlfriend that I remember. They've been blocked from my memory.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I tell my wife anyway. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kevin calling from Prairie Village, Kansas.
What's going on, Kevin?
I drive a 2001 Chrysler Voyager. About a couple of weeks ago, for whatever reason, every time I crank the steering wheel all the way to the left or right, like if I'm doing a three-point turn,
mm-hmm,
my airbag indicator pops on.
Oh,
and
really?
It stays illuminated for about 20 or 30 seconds, and then it goes away. And sometimes it'll happen when I'm just making a left or a right going down the street. And my concern is that this thing is going to push my nose through my skull at about 60 miles an hour if it goes off.
I'd stop smoking a pipe if I were you.
Yeah.
Because you never
Cigars
know.
Cigars are not much better.
Well, the pipe is a lot worse.
The pipe is a lot worse. The pipe hurts more, but you die in either case.
No, I think what's happening, you know, there are a bunch of contacts in the steering column, okay, that,
uh-huh,
that, and if you have also on your steering column, I don't know if you have it, you have controls to turn the radio volume up and whatnot, cruise control things. I don't know what you have on your particular model, but
I think a lot of the stuff is actually on lack of a better word, gear shifts or the things that are sticking out of the column itself rather than in the steering wheel.
Right, but nonetheless, whether that stuff is there or in the steering wheel, those electrical signals have to get from those switches, wherever they are, to the component they're operating, whether it's the wipers or your radio controls or cruise control or whatever.
Sure.
And all that's done by a bunch of contacts that are allowed to turn, you know, and make contact. So imagine if you had a stationary plate with a piece that rotated as the steering wheel turned and kept constant contact with it. What's happening with you is that when you go to the extreme, you're losing contact for that last couple of degrees of movement of the steering wheel.
Uh-huh.
And that's why the airbag light comes
because
on.
Because it's constantly checking for continuity. Because if you did, when you were making one of those illegal U-turns, hit like a tree at 30 miles an hour, your airbag wouldn't deploy. That's what it's telling you. Because there's no current. The airbag needs electricity to get to it to ignite the chemical in there to inflate the bag.
So if I hit something,
if you're
gonna
hit
going
something,
straight.
Try to do it straight on.
Yeah, straighten out that wheel.
You ought to get it fixed, though.
Well, Sure. Now, is it something as simple as replacing a fuse, or they're going to have to dig around?
Oh, no, they're going to have to dig.
They're
going to have to take the steering wheel off and investigate. And they'll take it apart, they'll put it back together, and then they'll realize that they didn't fix it, and they'll tell you to live with it.
That's great.
No, but they can replace the contacts, and they should get it to work correctly.
All right. I'll take her in.
All right.
Okay.
See you, Kevin. Good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Well, just as long as they don't hit anything on the way to the shop.
And if you make sure to straighten out that wheel, baby.
Just before you hit.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Actually, that's not bad, because it's unlikely that you're going to hit something.
Oh, no. When you're making one of those illegal U-turns and trying to zip around before the cops see you, you got a good shot at plowing into something with that wheel cranked all the way over.
Yeah, that's true. Especially when you think you can make it if you really crank it over.
Right.
And
that,
you don't make it.
Tree is closing in fast.
Oh, man.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Well, hi, guys. My name is Larry Mudd. I live in New Jersey, and I minister in Manhattan.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
You minister in Manhattan?
Yes, I work for a church here.
Okay. Uh-huh. So what's going on?
Well, I'm hoping that you can resolve yet another spousal dispute. My wife and I...
Wait a minute. You want us?
We usually start the spousal disputes.
Well,
people usually come to you with this kind of stuff?
Well, this is an area where my expertise is not needed and yours is.
Okay, go ahead.
We'll do our best.
Well, our family recently expanded. We've had our second child, and my wife and I are looking into buying a minivan. Mm-hmm. I'd like to buy, we need to buy a used one because we don't make much money, and I'd like to buy from a reputable, I guess, a rental car company because the prices seem fair, and I think the company's kept good care of the car. They keep everything in good repair. Mm-hmm. My wife thinks it's a bad idea because of what her old boyfriend used to do with his rental cars when he was on the road. So,
What did he used to do?
Well,
I'll tell you what my brother used to do.
Never mind.
Well, what she said he used to do, whether it was dry or wet, he'd pick the biggest empty parking lot and do donuts and something about popping the emergency brake and just trying to mistreat it as much as possible.
Well, we have... I have to tell the story.
No, you can't tell the story.
I have to tell the story.
The statute of limitations hasn't run out yet.
My brother and his dear friend and my dear friend, Tony. It was actually Tony, I think, who worked for the company, right? Yeah,
I don't remember. I don't remember anything.
He doesn't remember anything.
No.
That's the best way. Well, we live in Boston, and obviously a lot of people would rent a car at the airport and drive someplace and not return it to the airport. So the rental company had to have the cars returned whenever someone didn't return it to the airport himself. And in order to get to the airport here in Boston, you have to go through a tunnel, because the airport's underwater.
Yeah, kind of.
So you went through a tunnel. Well, Tony decides that he's driving all these cars all the time, and he notices a very interesting thing. When he's driving through the tunnel, if he shuts off the engine and turns it back on again, he gets the most powerful backfire you could ever imagine. And it reverberates, of course, because he's in this big tunnel.
All right.
So he got my brother to help him. And they were driving these cars back through the tunnel. And I'm sure that the next person who drove the car, the exhaust system fell out.
Oh, no. No, not the next person.
Right there.
Yeah, that was the old days when cars had carburetors and, you know, way before electronic ignition and distributors. And, boy, if you turned that ignition off for a few seconds and turned the key back on, you would get an explosion that, in some case, we learned not to do it on American Motors cars. It blew the muffler off every time. Anyway, but there are people, I guess, Larry, the reason my brother's telling you this story and exposing me, who mistreat rental cars that way. However, I think you're on the right track, because the vast majority of people who rent a car for a day or two, especially a minivan, aren't doing donuts.
Right.
They're not trying to blow the mufflers off.
Yeah, and they're not as clever as Tony was.
and so, you know, so I think you're perfectly okay to be thinking about buying it from a place that rents cars, as opposed to, and I've always been opposed to cars that are leased. I think that people who lease cars do so because they don't want to be bothered with any of the normal things associated with car ownership,
like
oil changes and the like.
Yeah.
You know, so I would be...
Where does your wife want to buy the car?
Well, she'd like to just go to a large used car lot and deal with them there.
Well, it's entirely possible if you do that, you're going to get a car that has either been traded in by somebody who had leased it or traded in by somebody who had the same kind of
mentality
about not maintaining the car. I'll keep it for 2 or 3 years, and then I'll just trade it in and get another one before I have a chance to wreck it.
We strongly believe that the rental car companies are a good place to buy a car.
And if they do nothing else, they are driven by a whole bunch of different people. So the chances of getting a string of one driver after another that's wrecking the thing is pretty small.
Right.
And they do, at the very least, change the oil often, which is all that's really required.
Yeah.
You know, of a new vehicle. And that's the most you could ask for. And I think that's better than you're getting with the average person who leases a car.
Right.
And that may be the reason, I think, that a lot of companies now, a lot of manufacturers are paying for the maintenance, too. Because they know that people don't take the cars in to have them serviced. So they figure if we do it for free, I think they have to go the next step.
Which is?
Come to your house and get the car.
All right.
Because the people who don't want to do it just don't want to do it, period. They're too busy to be inconvenienced, especially for a car that they don't own.
But you can tell your wife that we're very much on your side of this.
Right.
And your plan has our blessing, Larry.
Oh, well,
and if anything goes wrong with the car that you buy, you get it to us. We'll fix it for nothing.
See,
great.
That's our new warranty. See you later.
Super. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy. Well, it's happened again, believe it or not. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
Yeah, I have.
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Venalosa. Is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our intern is Ariel Niedermeyer. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Pine Bluff, Marshmallow Fluff, Cream Puff, Beef Stroganoff, and Oysters in the Rough Can't Get Enough Face Stuff, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Otekashawa. Our art critic is Dot Snice. Our transgender studies expert is Ben-Hur. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikov and Dropov. Mm. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne-Diaz, who's married to our father-in-law liaison, Royal Payne-Diaz. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Hegel-quoting bartenders in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1115, lope through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, getting your car ready for spring.
Which for my brother means tossing some fresh pine bark on the seats. But for most people, it means like spring cleaning.
I just have a different definition of cleaning than you do.
You know, I guess so. When most people use a vacuum, he uses a leaf blower. But if you're interested in really shining up your car after a long, hard winter, check out this week's tips from Car Talk's own detailing expert, Greg Yoke, all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though shallow water plankton apply for deeper water assignments whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.